This is Chief of Anything, created by Christian Kohlhoff and Michael Portz. Our podcasts serve the purpose of growing people skills for great success, excellent business results, and a happy, healthy people culture.
If this podcast is useful for you, please give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends. We love to hear from you, and we are always happy to learn how we can help teams achieve great success or overcome people pains. All contact details are in the show notes. Much success.
Conversation 4. Here and now, I am at home.
Please tell me the story of the guru and satsang again.
With pleasure. I once attended a Hindu satsang. In front is the guru, whose disciples sit on the floor in front of him. Then one disciple after the other goes to the front and asks the guru a question. He's completely free in his choice of subject. God, the world, life, death. The disciple asks whatever moves him. The guru answers the disciple's question. The disciple goes back to his seat, and everyone thinks calmly about the guru's answer. Then the next disciple comes forward and asks his question. This question can be related to that of his predecessor, to the guru's answer, or it can be a completely detached question. It doesn't matter. It always goes on like this. It's similar to an oracle, only a bit more spiritual.
Everyone can hear the questions that are asked and the guru's answer? Do the other students also say something about the topics, or are they in pure listening mode?
Everyone is in pure listening mode, unless they're asking their question.
A kind of group mentoring.
Yes, exactly.
What questions were asked in the satsang?
All kinds of questions, and completely random, about death, life, illness. It's interesting that all the questions that the disciples asked were usually of universal interest. The big questions in life, as well as in companies, often concern everyone. Where do we want to go? Why do we want to go? How do we get there? What I found most exciting was what the guru told me before it started. All the disciples were sitting there quietly, meditating, and completely absorbed in themselves. The guru came, sat down in front, kept silent for a while, and began to tell a story. He talked about another satsang in Munich, where he put up pictures in the front. They were pictures of his teachers, Buddha, Jesus, Lao Tzu. He said, "This is my family." One of the students asked him why he put up the pictures of his family here in this public space and not privately at his home. The guru replied, "I am at home here, here and now." I'd like to talk to you about that. What does it mean to be in the here and now? How can I use this for myself and my company?
To be present in this moment. To live in the moment and be truly present in a holistic way.
I have a good counterproposal. At Chico Di Cafe, we had a nice office in Grunwald. We also held our management meetings there. We often had the window open for fresh air. Grunwald is a very busy area, and often a sports car would rush past the window. Every time the loud rattling of a car came closer, concentration was interrupted. Everyone immediately looked outside and thought, "Who is that? Do I know him?" Even when we were discussing an important topic and a loud engine suddenly roared outside, everyone immediately looked out the window again. A few minutes passed until everyone was back on task. The next Porsche whizzed by.
Obviously, the energy went more towards the passing cars with broken exhausts.
I also don't know why the exhausts of these sports cars are always broken. Poor people. How do I manage to keep my focus and direct awareness to where I want it to be? Because my energy follows the attention. To where my attention is, my energy flows. In the example of the CEO meetings, I'd like the participants to direct 100% of their attention and energy to company topics. The meeting was about important questions that concern our employees, our goals, customers, etc. That's where the group's energy should flow, so that we can solve the issues quickly, within the deadlines. I don't want us to worry about the car exhaust sputtering outside the window.
The same happens when the cell phone is on the table and flashes with a notification, beckoning me to take a quick look at it, or when the laptop is open, distracting me with every incoming email. Our world is full of distractions that affect my consciousness and my awareness, pulling me away from my desired focus.
Who decides where I direct my attention?
I'm tempted to answer, WhatsApp decides. Of course, I do. I decide everything in my life.
Then you would have decided to let WhatsApp make that decision.
I'm now making a very conscious decision as to when to turn off my cell phone and put it away or leave it on the table. The best thing to do is to take it completely out of my field of vision. There's an interesting study you once shared with us about what happens in classrooms that are allowed to bring their cell phones. What was that again?
I've heard a story about the so-called iPhone effect. Apparently, when two people are talking and a smartphone is on the table, on the bench, or anywhere within reach, the conversations are rated as less deep. It doesn't matter whether the cell phone is directly visible on the table or not. As soon as the other person knows that the person with whom he is speaking has it handy, he perceives him as less attentive. Because if it beeps, rings, vibrates, and he looks at it, even for a short moment, he sends a clear signal, this is more important to me than our conversation.
The phone becomes an anchor for all the things that might distract me.
Yes. This anchor has a shocking impact, because as soon as the device is there, I signal, no matter the reason this cell phone flashes up, it's more important to me, therefore I put it here. While I'm talking to you, I'm showing you this device, and everything that might happen with it is more important to me than my relationship with you. Not a nice feeling for you, is it?
No, absolutely not. It reminds me of something my father does. As soon as the phone rings at home, he drops everything and rushes straight to the phone. Even in the middle of really important conversations, it could be a matter of life or death, he leaves me standing and picks up the phone as soon as the phone rings.
Well, in the past, it was certainly very important. At that time, in the 70s, telephoning wasn't very common and long-distance calls were very expensive. If the telephone rang at that time, it was probably quite important.
You're probably right. Today, the world is different. I hardly answer the phone anymore. When it's important, I call back. 95% of my communication is asynchronous.
I think a little bit differently. I'm a big fan of synchronous communication. There are certainly topics that I can handle well asynchronously, such as making appointments and short votes. However, when it comes to relationship work such as employee meetings, negotiations with suppliers, meetings with customers or a chat with colleagues, I find it very important to communicate synchronously.
I invite you to try out what it's like to build a relationship asynchronously. Soon we'll just record our podcast via voice message.
By my standards, we're already pretty much asynchronous.
The world is changing.
The difficulty is to choose the right one for the situation among all the many communication channels.
There's another study about school children and backpacks from last year that I find very interesting. It's clear that smartphones have long been on the scene in schools. To think that we can forbid students from bringing them is an illusion. At least few schools believe that. So the question is, where will the kids' smartphones go? The study examined different classrooms. In one, the students were allowed to bring their cell phones into the classroom, but they had to leave it in a backpack under the table. In the comparison class, the children were not permitted to bring their cell phones into the classroom. They either had to put it outside in their locker or leave it at home. The learning efficiency in the class where the students didn't bring the phone into the classroom was significantly higher than the learning efficiency in the other classes where the students kept them in their backpacks, about 20 to 25%. The explanation is the same for the cell phone on the table. Whether it flashes or not, it doesn't matter. The cell phone becomes an anchor for all the other things that happen and that can distract me. The children in the classrooms with the cell phone in the backpack constantly looked under the table and thought, my phone is in the backpack. A new message might have arrived. While the children whose cell phones were stored out of reach did not have these thoughts at all, the distraction rate is much lower.
That's why it's better not to bring the cell phones to the meeting in the first place.
In my workshops, I do it very demonstratively. I tell this story, take the phone, put it in my backpack, and carry the backpack outside. It disappears completely from my field of vision, and I'm maximally focused on the participants.
Often, people come to a meeting completely unprepared. When they bring up topics that need to be discussed, they quickly check their cell phone and choose the urgent topics first, because they might be at the top of their email inbox. They then don't distinguish between urgent and important, but improvise using their smartphones. Of course, it's better to prepare a meeting accordingly so that you are clear about what you want to achieve and how you want to achieve it in this conversation. This makes it easier to get through the meeting successfully.
It's easier to focus on the goal first and then implement it. This can also be defined together at the beginning of the meeting. I often ask the group, "What is today's goal or the purpose of the meeting?" I then write this goal and an agenda on a flip chart, which we use to structure the meeting and go through it together.
Right. And the cell phones go away.
There is an argument that comes up that goes something like this. "I need information from my cell phone for the meeting," or "I need the laptop to take notes. Is that okay?"
I guess. Kinda.
I agree. In the end, it's like everything else. Who makes the decision to be focused?
Only I can make this decision for myself.
Everyone for himself. By putting my phone in the backpack, this is my way of manifesting that decision. I can also decide not to put it away and still stay 100% focused in the meeting. There are also inner triggers that distract me. Suddenly, in the middle of a meeting, I think about the fact that I really want to buy some orange juice. When I realize this and notice that other thoughts are distracting me, I can actively decide against these distracting thoughts and concentrate on my actual focus again. By thought, hello moment in the here and now. Active awareness.
What do you think of the following definition? Focus is my ability to do the things I said I would do, as long as I want to do them.
I think it's good. Long, but good.
The crucial point is, I'm doing what I intend to do, and not what I do out of a random impulse. Moreover, I do it as long as I set out to do it, until it's finished or until I make another decision.
I decide where my energy goes. Where focus goes, energy flows. Or where awareness goes, energy flows. I constantly make the decision what I use my energy for. And what I use my energy for is ultimately what happens. It's exactly what becomes true in my world. I determine what becomes true.
That's the way it is. We've concentrated on this chapter for as long as we wanted, until it's finished. Here and now, we're done with it.
Awareness of what I am focusing on and whether or not I am distracted is a skill that will become even more important in the future. Technological progress is exponential, and our world is becoming ever faster. Smartwatches vibrate directly on your wrist with every incoming email. I have to be able to balance between focus and accessibility autonomously and consciously. Otherwise, I will lose myself in wild actionism and become overwhelmed. When this happens, I can only helplessly watch how I run out of time, my most valuable resource. Energy follows focus.
This is Chief of Anything, created by Christian Kohlhoff and Michael Ports. Our podcasts serve the purpose of growing people's skills for great success, excellent business results, and a happy, healthy people culture.
If this podcast is useful for you, please give us a 5-star rating and tell your friends. We love to hear from you, and we are always happy to learn how we can help teams achieve great success or overcome people pains. All contact details are in the show notes. Much success.